welcome to another episode of Mysteries and Beyond. I am your host, Gavino, and thank you for joining us on another episode. And today's episode, we will be talking about something that happened in Australia. With me, I got Joe.
Hey guys, what's up?
And Werner.
Hello everyone.
And
why am I always last?
Karina. All right. And with me,
I'm kidding.
And with me, we got Karina.
Hi.
Joe.
Hi guys, how's it going?
And Werner.
Hey everyone.
Yeah, you're right. It was better the other way around.
And I don't know if you guys ever heard of this story or mystery. It was basically has to take place in Somerton Park, a suburb of Adelaide, South Australia. So this is the mystery of the Somerton Man. So the Somerton Man was an unidentified man whose body was found on December 1st, 1948, on the beach at Somerton Park, a suburb of Adelaide, South Australia. The case is also known as the Persian phrase Taman Shud, meaning is over or is finished, which was printed in a scrap of paper found months later in the fob pocket of the man's trousers. The scrap has been torn from the final page of the copy of the Rubaiyat of Omar Khayyam, authored of a 12th century poet. So he was a poet, and this guy had a poem in his
chonies.
Yeah, in his chonies. Basically, following the public appeal by the police, the book was from a page torn from one of the books that was located on the backside of the cover. Detectives read through indentations left from previous handwritings, a local telephone number, another unidentified number, and a text that resembled a coded message. The text has not been deciphered or interpreted in way that satisfies authorities on the case. Basically, they found this guy. So the discovery of the body on December 1st, 1948, at 6:30 in the morning, police was contacted after a body of a man was discovered on Somerton Park Beach near, how do you say that?
Glenelg,
11 kilometers southwest of Adelaide, South Australia. The man was found laying in the sand across from a crippled children's home, which was the corner of Esplanade and Bickford Terrace. He was laying back with his head resting against the seawall, with his legs extended and his feet crossed. It was believed that the man had died while sleeping. An unlit cigarette was on the right collar of his coat. A search of his pockets revealed an unused second-class rail ticket from Adelaide to Henley Beach, a bus ticket from the city that may not have been used, a narrow aluminum comb that had been manufactured in the U.S., a half-emptied packet of juice fruit.
Nice. Sure, that's a new one. Yeah.
Juicy fruit.
I think I like juice fruit better.
Yeah. Juice fruit chewing gum.
Let's start our own.
A half-empty packet of juicy fruit chewing gum. An Army Club cigarette. Or Army Club cigarette packet. Which contained 7 cigarettes of a different brand. Cancitas. I don't know what that is.
Wait, so he had all this on him?
Cigarettes. Yeah. And a quarter full box of Bryant and May matches. Witnesses.
So he had matches, gum, a poem.
Cigarettes.
A cigarette.
A bus ticket. Second class rail ticket, you know, for like a train.
Yeah.
You know.
That's a lot. 10 pockets.
Yeah. And I mean, there's little things. Some matches, you know, and witnesses who came forward said that the evening of November 30th, They had seen an individual resembling the dead man lying on his back in the same spot where the corpse was later found. A couple who saw him at around 7 p.m. noted that they saw him extend his right arm to its fullest extent and then drop it limply. Another couple who saw him 7:30 p.m. to 8 p.m., during which the time streetlights had come on, recounted that they did not see him move during the half an hour in which he was in view. Although they did have the impression that his position had changed, although they commented between themselves that it was odd that he was not reacting to the mosquitoes, they had thought it more likely that he was drunk or asleep, and thus did not investigate further. One of the witnesses told the police officer, she observed the man looking down at the sleeping man from the top of the steps that led to the beach. Witnesses said the body was in the same position when the police viewed it. Mm. So, there was witnesses that saw this guy.
Yeah.
I guess he was still alive on the 30th. Mm-hmm. But he didn't move or anything. He had all this stuff, and when they found him, he was dead on December 1st. He basically just appeared there. They don't know who he was, you know. And yeah. He was in a dress shirt, you know, kind of like business attire, you know.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So other witnesses came forward in 1959 and reported that to the police that he and three others had seen well-dressed man carrying another man on his shoulders along Somerton Park Beach that night before the body was found. A police report was made by Detective Don O'Doherty. According to pathologist John Burton Cleanland.
So is that the only reason why this is kind of a story, just because he was in a well-dressed suit?
Yeah, well,
because think about it. If he was a regular homeless person or something, mm-hmm. yeah. He had all this in his pocket, no one really cared. Yeah. I
mean, wasn't being well dressed common back then anyway?
Mm-hmm.
Especially. That's true. I guess they didn't have an identity, right? Haven't found an identity for this guy.
Yeah, so this guy, he had a text of poem that was in his pocket that was torn from a book, you know, a poetry book. This guy basically just showed up on the beach, you know, laying down on next to the seawall, you know, his cigarette was half lit, mm-hmm. you know, and he had cigarettes and and yeah, man, this they didn't know who he was, what he was doing there.
Yeah.
How come he also had on the back of the paper, it was a message.
Oh, yeah, the coded message.
Coded message.
That is pretty interesting. Yeah.
They don't know why he had it.
And there's two different reports, right?
What was the message?
I'll show you the message right now.
Oh, okay.
So he was dressed in a white shirt, a red, red, white, and blue tie, brown trousers, socks, so patriotic. And shoes.
Yeah.
A brown knitted pullover in fashionable gray and brown double-breasted jacket of reportedly American tailoring. All labels on his clothes have been removed, and that had no hat. Or usually in 1940, they always had, you know, a hat. You know, mm-hmm. Or he had a wallet. He was clean shaven and carried no identification, which led police to believe he had committed suicide. Finally, his dental records were not able to be matched to any known person. An autopsy was conducted, and the pathologist estimated the time of death was around 2 in the morning on December 1st.
So it's odd, too, because it looks like he was wearing a lot of stuff that's American-made.
Yeah.
He had a pack of cigarettes that you could only get, or matches that were from
the
America.
The style of clothes he had was a tailor-made, you know, mm-hmm.
What's suit. A double breast?
Has that little, shoulder, I think it was,
Google it.
Shoulder pad?
Double breast. It's just going to show you boobies.
I don't know how to...
I always hear that. Yeah, I don't know what a double-breasted jacket is. Does it just have extra cushion on the chest?
That's my assumption, but I don't know.
Porn.
I think it's like this.
Okay. They had that like back double. Then?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of an older style. Yeah.
I guess it's when it overlaps.
So, yeah. Yeah.
When it overlaps.
Okay. Yeah. And like the V, it's kind of like a V and it's kind of low, mm-hmm. too. It's
like, I think it like comes over like this.
Okay.
See, like that.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Double breasted jacket.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I see. Yeah.
So yeah, and then they did an autopsy, and the autopsy also showed that the man's last meal was pasty eaten about 3 to 4 hours before his death. But tests failed that reveal any foreign substances in his body. The pathologist, Dr. Dwyer, concluded, "I am quite convinced," this is in quotes, "I am quite convinced the death could not have been natural. The poison, I suggest, was a barbiturate or a soluble hypnotic." Hmm. I don't know what that is.
When they say pasty, what does that mean?
So it was like, I guess something like
most like a pastry, like a I don't know,
pasty for us.
I heard pasty, not pastry.
It's pasty. It's pasty.
So maybe like something oatmeal, or that's what I'm thinking of. Like something soft. Something.
Okay.
Yeah. My head went to chalk. That's why chalk, I didn't know.
Yeah. I don't think he.
Okay. Just wanted to clarify.
They said either, although poisoning remained as a prime suspicion, the pasty was not believed to be the source. So they don't know if it was like, you know, a poison, maybe he ate something, you know, and it had poison in it or something, or who knows, you know. Other than that, the coroner was unable to reach a conclusion as the man's identity, cause of death, or whether the man seen alive at Somerton Beach on the evening of the 30th of November was the same man, as nobody had seen his face at that time. The body was then embalmed on December 10th, 1948, after the police were unable to get positive identification. The police said that this was the first time they knew that such action was needed. So they also discovered a suitcase on January 14th, 1949. So this is, you know, a month later.
Yeah,
you know?
A month later.
Uh-huh. Staff at the Adelaide Railway Station discovered a brown suitcase with its label removed, which had been checked into the station clock room after 11 a.m. on November 30th, 1948. It was believed that the suitcase was owned by the man on the beach. In the case were the red checked dressing gown, a size 7 red felt pair of slippers, 4 pairs of underpants, pajamas, shaving items, a light brown pair of trousers with sand in the cuffs, and electrician's screwdriver. A table knife cut down into a short, sharp instrument, a pair of scissors with sharpened points, a small square of zinc, thought to have been used as a protective sheath for the knife and scissors, and the stenciling brush as used by third officers on merchant ships for stenciling cargo. Also on the suitcase was a thread card barber brand, orange wax thread of an unusual type, not available in Australia. It was the same as the used to repair the lining of the pocket of the trousers the dead man was wearing. Although identified marks on the clothes had been removed, but the police found no name. Found the name Keen,
yeah,
on a tie, or Keen on a laundry bag, and Keen on a singlet, which is like an undershirt, along with 3 dry cleaning marks. Police believe that whoever removed the clothing tags either overlooked these 3 items or purposely left Keen tags on the clothes, knowing Keen was not the dead man's name. With wartime rationing still in force, clothing was difficult to acquire at the time, although it was very common practice to use name tags. It was also common when buying secondhand clothing to remove the tags of the previous owners. What was unusual was that there was no spare socks found in the case and no correspondence, although the police found pencils and unused letter stationery. They found a lot of things in here that, you know, could probably lead to this guy's, you know, identity. Police checked incoming train records and believe that the man had arrived at the Adelaide rail station by overnight train from either Melbourne, Sydney, or Port Augusta. They speculated he had showered and shaved at the adjacent city baths before returning to the train station to purchase a ticket for the 10:50 a.m. train to Henley Beach, which, for whatever reason, he missed or did not catch. He immediately checked this suitcase at the station cloakroom.
Cloakroom.
Before leaving the station and catching a city bus to Glenelg. Although named City Baths, the center was not a public bathing facility, but rather a public swimming pool. The railway station bathing facilities were adjacent to the station. Cloakroom, which itself was adjacent to the station's southern exit onto North Terrace. The city's baths on King William Street were accessed at...
I want a Coke.
Do it. Just
That's all I can think of.
Do it right now.
Assessed from the station's northern exit via a laneway. There is no record of the station's bathroom facilities being unavailable on that day he had arrived. So, this guy was clean shaven when they found him, too. So, you know, and he was like, you know, clean, basically.
Yeah, getting ready to leave somewhere.
So the little connection that they had with the Rubaiyat of Omar Khayyam, around the same time of the inquest, a tiny piece of rolled up paper with the words Taman Shud, it was found in a fob pocket sewn within the dead man's trousers pocket. Public library officials called in the translate the text identified it as a phrase meaning ended. Or finished, found on the last page of the Rubaiyat of Omar Khayyam. Khayyam? I don't know how you say it, that one last part.
Yeah, that's right.
Khayyam? The paper's verso side was blank. Police conducted an Australian-wide search to find a copy of the book that had a similarity blank verse. A photograph of the scrap of paper was released to the press. So this is what they found. One. You know, Taman Shud. Mm-hmm. Following the public appeal of the police, the copy of the Rubaiyat from which the page had been torn was located. A man showed police at a 1941 edition of Edward Fitzgerald's, which was like an 1859 translation of the Rubaiyat, published by Whitcomb and Toombs in Christchurchill, New Zealand. Detective Sergeant Lionel Lean, who led the initial investigation, often protected the privacy of the witness in public statements by using pseudonyms. Lean referred to the man who found the book by the pseudonym Ronald Francis, and he has never been officially identified. Francis had not considered that the book might be connected to the case until he had seen an article in the previous day's newspaper. There is some uncertainty about the circumstances under which the book was found. One newspaper article refers to the book being found about a week or two before the body was found. Former South Australian police detective Jerry Feltus reports that the book was found just after the man was found on the beach on Somerton. The timing is significant as the man is presumed, based on the suitcase, to have arrived at Adelaide the day before he was found on the beach. If the book was found 1 or 2 weeks before, it suggests that the man had visited previously and had been in Adelaide for a long period. Most accounts state that the book was found in an unlocked car parked in Jetty Road, Glenelg, either in the rear floor well or on the back seat. The theme of the Rubaiyat is that one should live life to the fullest and have no regrets when it ends. The poem's subject led police to theorize that the man had committed suicide by poison. Although no other evidence corroborated the theory, the book was missing the words Taman Shud on the last page, which had a blank verse, and microscopic tests indicate that the piece of paper was from the page torn from the book. Also, the back of the book were faint indentations representing five lines of text in capital letters. The second line has been struck out, a fact considered significant due to its similarities to the fourth line and possibility that it represents an error in encryption. So this is the message that it had behind it.
No, that's the encrypted one.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So this book, I mean, they actually found the book that he tore this page from and had all the same thing, you know, that was basically,
yeah,
you know, from that book. But yeah, it's weird because it's like that book that they had was from a different area, you know, and it belonged to someone else. In the book, it is unclear whether the first line begins with an M or a W. It is widely believed that the letter W, owning a distinctive difference then compared to the stricken letter M, there appears to be a deleted or underlined line in the text that reads M-L-I-A-O-I. Although the last characters in the line of text looks like an L, it is fairly clear that the closer inspection of this image that is the formed from an I and the extensions of the line used to delete the underline that the line text of that line text. Also, the other L has a curve at the bottom part of the character. There's an X above that last O in the code, and it is known if this is significant to the code or not. So they don't know exactly what does it mean or what, you know. Because see, like, this is like a W.
Or it could be an
I M. I see an M.
Or M.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's difficult to say, yeah.
And then M-L-I-A-O-I is crossed out.
Yeah.
You know?
That's odd. I wonder what he was trying to write. What the hell?
That's weird, huh?
Yeah.
So who did they think he is? Or what?
And they just don't have an explanation. They don't know exactly why he left, you know. He left the suitcase in the train station away from where his body was found. You know, the autopsy found out that, you know, he was either poisoned or, you know, they couldn't find out exactly what was the cause of death. You know? Mm-hmm. And in his pocket, you know, in his underwear was this message, you know,
it was sewn in, right?
Yeah, it was sewn in.
Yeah, there was another piece. Which one was the one that ended was the one that they found?
Mm-hmm.
The Taman Shud ended. That was sewn. Yeah, that's weird.
They also found a telephone number that was found on the back of the book belonging to the nurse named Jessica Ellen Joe Thompson. Joe with zero.
Joe. Yeah.
Yes. It's the woman.
Yes.
Born Jesse Harkness in the Sydney suburb of Microville, New South Wales, who lived in Moseley Street, Glenelg, about 400 meters north of the location where the body was found. When she was interviewed by the police, Thompson said that she did not know the dead man or why he would have her number, and chose to visit her suburb on the night of his death. However, she also reported that at some time in the late 1948, an unidentified man had attempted to visit her and asked a next-door neighbor about her. In his book on the case, Jerry Feltis stated that when he interviewed Thompson in 2002, he found that she was either being evasive or she just did not wish to talk about it. Fieltis believed Thompson knew the Somerton man identity. Thompson's daughter, Kate, in a televised interview in 2014 with Channel 9's 60 Minutes, also said that she believed that her mother knew the dead man. In 1949, Jessica Thompson's requested that the police not keep a permanent record of her name or release her details in third parties, as it would embarrassing and harmful to her reputation to be linked to such a case. The police agreed in the decision that hampered later investigations in news media, books, and other discussions of other cases. Thompson was frequently referred to by various pseudonyms, including a nickname, Justine, a name which names such as Teresa Johnson, Nee Powell. Feltis's 2010 claimed he was given permission by the Thompson family to disclose her name and that of her husband, Prosper Thompson. Nevertheless, the names Feltis used in his books were pseudonyms. Feltis also stated that her family did not know of her connection with the case, and he agreed not to disclose her identity for any that might reveal it. Thompson's real name was considered important because it was maybe the decryption key for the purported code. Mm. So this girl, you know, Jessica Thompson, or whatever they call her, she basically had known this guy or saw this guy before, you know, he passed away. So either he, I don't know if it was like a...
Friends with benefits.
Who knows, you know? It had her number, her phone number in the back of the book.
Yeah.
You know, and it belonged to her. And on it, also the pages that she had as a result... conversations with Thompson, the police suspected that Boxall was the dead man. Boxall. I don't know how you say that. Boxall?
Boxall?
Boxall was the dead man. However, in July 1949, Boxall was found in Sydney, and the final page of the copy of the Rubaiyat, reportedly the 1924 edition published in Sydney, was intact with the words Taman Shud still in place. Boxall was now working in the maintenance section of the Randwick bus depot, and was unaware of any link between the dead man and himself. And in front copy of the Rubaiyat was the given to Boxall. Jessica Harkness had signed herself Justine and written on the verse 70. So that's basically... They thought they found this this dude, you know, with the same book. Because I guess this book that they were trying to find out, you know.
So what's the poem?
The poem was, I think, is this one. No, this was from...
Sick.
Yeah, I don't see it.
I was curious.
Yeah, what the poem to was, what it right?
Said.
Have had any
Was any it a haiku? Reference.
Yeah, they don't say... You don't say, yeah. Police photo of the corpse.
I know, that looks pretty good. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
He looks like he's sleeping.
I know. Right? Yeah. Or at least drunk.
Do they have any more pictures of the Somerton man?
Yeah, I think they do.
I think he just knew too much information.
It's odd that she's like a nurse.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like she kind of poisoned him or something, or knew something, because what they said was like they ruled out that it wasn't a natural cause, like
So like I said, you know, the coroner or the autopsy conducted many things, you know. The heart was of normal size, you know. He had like striking large spleen, great blood vessels. He had really good blood vessels, acute gastritis, hemorrhage, you know.
Hot.
There was congestion of the pharynx, and gullet was covered with whitening of superficial layers of the mucosa. with a patch of ulcerations in the middle of it. Stomach was deeply congested. So he was tapado then.
You know? Not tapado.
He was backed up.
Yeah, damn.
But he was a 5 foot man, you know, 11 inches tall.
Short king.
Yeah, I don't know. 5'11".
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I thought he was just five.
Yeah, five. There was a pause, if you know, but 5'11".
5'11", or 180 centimeters. Slightly gray, round temples. He was a ginger.
Hot.
Ginger colored hair.
I like gingers.
With broad shoulders and narrow waist. Hands and nails that showed no signs of manual labor. Big and little toes that meant in the wedge shape, like those of dancers. Or someone who's wears boots, pointed boots. Pointed toes. That's what he had. Mm. Yeah, so, I mean, this guy, they didn't know exactly what happened to him, how he died, mm-hmm. how he appeared there, how he got, a bus ride ticket,
yeah,
and a train ticket, and he just appeared on the beach, dead, with a cigarette.
Yeah.
And, that's the way to go, man.
And, I mean, he had a poem.
Yeah.
He had a... cigarettes,
mm-hmm.
matches, and I mean he didn't get beat up or anything. They couldn't find anything. And
that's what's
it's weird. And then his wallet, he had no ID, no identification at all.
That's the only thing that was missing,
mm-hmm.
an ID.
So they didn't have DNA testing or any of that stuff back
not,
then.
No, not in the 40s, nah, dude.
Yeah.
Oh, this is the 40s.
Yeah, 1948,
right after the war.
All they had were dental records, but they couldn't even link them up through the dental records. Yeah.
But if it wasn't from then, I mean, that makes sense.
Yeah,
I mean,
and it says, a lot of it points that he wasn't, from there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it's weird, because, the suit he had was of American-tailored.
Yeah.
It was made,
Yeah.
Yeah, he had a matchbox. Yeah. That mm-hmm. Those matches were, I think, found in the U.S.,
yeah, and then
so that's you're right.
They found also it became very international back in the day, in the 40s and 50s, and then even got attention of the United States, the FBI, and they used his fingerprints and files and domestic criminals. Scotland Yard did the same, and tried to look for what he was,
Mm-hmm.
It was an international thing,
Right. Yeah, everybody's trying to figure out, where he came from. Yeah, if there's a lot of clues from, different areas.
Mm-hmm. And then, basically, it was hard because they still haven't decoded the code, the message that he had. They even put it, requested a... cryptographers, what do they call them? Analyzed the handwriting and text in 1978. The cryptographers reported that it would be impossible to provide a satisfactory answer. If the text were an encrypted message, it briefly meant that it had insufficient symbols, from which it was clear that it could be extracted.
Yeah.
And the text would be meaningless, produced or of a disturbed mind.
Yeah.
Even in 2004, retired detective Jerry Feltus suggested a Sunday Mail article that final line that spells out ITTMTSAMSTGAB could stand for the initials of "It's time to move to South Australia, Mosley Street." Jessica Thompson lived in Mosley Street, which is the main road through Glenelg. In 2009 to 2011, Derek Abbott's team concluded that it was most likely that each letter was the first letter of a word. A 2014 analysis by a computational linguist, John Relling, Strong supports that the theory of the letters consisted of the initials of some English text, but finds no match of these large surveys. Of
literature.
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 There we go. Anne concludes that the letters were likely written as a form of shorthand, not as a code, and that the original text had likely never been determined. So they never found out exactly what it was, you know. Yeah.
It says that he was possibly identified in 2022.
Mm-hmm, right here. So the case kept going and it's still open, you know, and they never found. But recently on July 26, 2022, this year, you know, Adelaide University Professor Derek Abbott, in an association with genealogist Colleen M. Fitzpatrick, claimed to have identified the man as Carl Charles Webb, an electrical engineer and instrument maker born in 1905, based on genetic genealogy from DNA of the man's hair. South Australia Police and Forensic Science South Australia have not verified the results, but South Australia Police said that they were cautiously optimistic about it. So they had finally a clue at the end, you know.
Yeah,
maybe it was this guy, you know.
DNA. Yeah,
it makes sense. I mean, but DNA wasn't a thing at the time.
The mystery still goes on and how he got there or how he died. Yeah. Who killed him? Or
Or if he killed himself. Well, maybe more. You're right there, Kevin.
Had a hiccup there. But I mean, this is still a mystery to this day. You know, hasn't been fully confirmed. But what do you think, Karina? What do you think this guy like?
What do I think?
Mm-hmm.
What the hell? I mean, I feel like he just like fell into. He knew too much. He knew too much of something we're never going to know about, obviously.
Maybe
he knew. I think it was meant for us to not to find out.
Yeah, it's weird. I mean, he was, you know, an electrical engineer is what they're thinking
he was. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, you never know nowadays, though. I feel like he probably led a double life.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Maybe like he was a spy during that time.
A lot of people lived double lives.
The war or something.
Yeah.
You know, maybe they got to him or who knows. Maybe he was kidnapped, you know, killed or something for his, like, technology or something he found. I mean.
Yeah. I mean, electrical engineer says that. Yeah. I mean, it was very valuable back then.
What if
he must have known something.
No.
Yeah.
Maybe he was a time traveler.
Maybe. So I'm going to confuse these guys for years. I'm just going to die right here, you know, with only this. This clue, and then this will confuse him for decades.
Yeah.
What do you think, Joe?
I mean, initially, it's just like, you know, it was just a guy who happened to, I don't know, drink too much and die. But like, I don't know, with like these clues and like these codes that we haven't corrected, and the phone number of stuff. No. Well, he had like organ failure and stuff going on. So I mean, I mean, they're thinking poison, but I mean, yeah, who knows? But it's difficult to say. I mean, I want to. It could be a suicide, is what I'm thinking. But I mean, it's just
maybe just spend his last days at the beach or something.
Last days at the beach and decided to, you know.
I mean, check he was out. Backed I mean, up, so.
Yeah, I'm sure he felt it. You know, especially back then. I mean, there wasn't many options for him. You know, could have just decided, hey, this is how I'm gonna go out, and then just happened to not carry ID with him because I mean. You know, what does it matter to him? And then it starts this whole mystery. But honestly, but who knows? It could be anything. But you know, with like with this year, that potential revelation with him being, you know, electrical engineer and you know, this web guy, maybe we can figure it out, you know, sooner rather than later, what who this person was and, you know, what actually happened.
Yeah.
But it's definitely interesting.
Yeah, I think I really hope that with like the new information they're able to trace back, like, and ask like relatives from back then, like, you know, maybe he went on a search to find like a family member or something with that. Was it Jessica Thompson or whatever was a family member, a relative or something? Mm-hmm. Didn't want anything to do with them.
Past lover or something.
Yeah, yeah, ex-girlfriend,
something like maybe. That. Yeah.
I mean, she did have a husband.
I feel like he was like on his. Yeah. He was like about to die, and he just wanted to do one final like hurrah. And unfortunately,
yeah, yeah,
was going to go visit her or something?
Yeah, yeah. Like, that's what it seems like to me. Maybe it's a romance.
Maybe it's a romance story.
Yeah. This is what
a lot of the best stories are. You know?
Yeah, yeah. And then he just so happens to, pass on the beach.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I really am curious to, I hope that the authorities, the Australian authorities, investigate a little more and they can trace back his lineage, the Webb family, if he is Webb, and they'll be able to provide more answers. So we'll see. And it's just a couple months ago, so hopefully in the
next
couple months or years,
this summer. We'll
hear something. What beach was he found in?
He was found on South Australian Adelaide suburb of Adelaide, Somerton Park. Mm-hmm. It's a seaside suburb of Adelaide. Mm. So yeah, I mean, they found all these unusual objects, you know. I mean, a bus ticket, a train ride ticket, you know. Mm-hmm. They found the matches, cigarettes, and, you know, his suitcase was somewhere else. He wasn't wearing a hat.
Yeah.
You know, and they had an autopsy. He had some food, but it was like, pasty kind of thing, you know?
Yeah. Pasty. Like, so pasty is like mashed potatoes. Yeah. Yeah. It's like stuff that's like mush, mm-hmm. like oatmeal.
Yeah, something like white cheese. Yeah.
So, yeah, it sounded like he knew like something was going on internally.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So.
Maybe bread.
I mean, yeah, that's a mystery to this day. We don't know exactly what this guy was, you know, or what he was doing. Mm-hmm. And if it was this, electrical engineer, you know, after the war, you know. Mm-hmm. And that's what was going on.
Yeah. Maybe one day we'll find out.
Yeah. We'll have to...
keep an ear out for the Somerton man.
Exactly, yeah. We'll have to provide an update if we hear anything.
Yeah, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that's the Somerton man, you know. It's a story I've heard about it a couple times before, you know, talked on other shows and stuff and, mm-hmm. you know, mysteries. I mean, it went in internationally, all over the world, even in the U.S. and, you know, detectives from Scotland Yard to find out, you know, who this guy was and what he was doing in the middle of nowhere. And no one ever claimed him, basically, you know. He's actually buried in South Australia, I think he is buried in South Australia's gravesite in West Terrace Cemetery, mm-hmm. Adelaide.
Yeah, so not far from where they found him.
Yeah, so if they want to, you know, if you want to go see his gravesite, they have that available, his burial site.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that concludes our episode on the Somerton Man. And there's other stories out there if you want to learn more about the Somerton Man. It's spelled Somerton Man. Mystery, Somerton Man, Man. And that concludes our episode, you know. Make sure you guys follow us on our Mysteries and Beyond page on Facebook, fan page. It's spelled BYND at the end, Mysteries and Beyond. And our Instagram, Mysteries and Beyond. You guys can follow us there. You could also see our show notes that we post up some pictures and some of the mysteries and anomalies that we, you know, feature on their show. And you can visit us on our website on mysteriesandbeyond.com, where you could go to our About Me page and send us an email if you want to, you know, suggest a topic for future, you know, or future topics. Or even, you know, send us an article or even say what's up. You know, I always respond. And yeah, that concludes our episode.
All right. Thanks for listening, guys.
Thank you, Karina, for joining.
Thank you for having me.
This episode. And Joe, thank mm-hmm. you for joining us.
Of course. Always a pleasure.
Werner, too.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
Werner's looking at pictures.
Yeah, I'm looking at pictures. It's really interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll see if we can post them up on Instagram or Facebook.
And yeah, I mean, if you want to look at more pictures of the Somerton Man, they have that available, you know. And yeah, so that concludes our episode, and we will see you guys or listen to us next time, or how do you say?
Yeah, you could just say we'll see you guys next time. Yeah, thanks for
joining us.
In.
Join us next time.
There you go.
Bye bye.
Peace. Bye.